So next speaker, Bucks and John, 10 years of tickle-ish espresso machine. So it's the third time I see the great team. You can always film him.
Okay,
and how can I have you be the clicker?
You can be the clicker. Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to say the word click.
Yeah.
And click means next slide.
Yeah, yeah.
Just give me 1 second.
Upside down, sunny side up, honey.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So in this talk, I'm not going to talk about this. And this is the tablet that's on our espresso machine, because I've previously given two talks about that. That's running an app in TickleTK, or rather Androwish. This talk is going to be mostly about NaviServer. And it's going to be what happens if a company settles on Tickle and NaviServer from the very beginning. What happens then 10 years later? Before I start, just a little bit of history as to what makes this presentation happen. In my teenage years, from 16 to about 20, I lived next to Yale University and I worked with the hospital. And I was the only programmer writing all the apps that ran the hospital, so patient tracking and insurance and all that. And it allowed the hospital to make decisions about how to run itself, and then the IT support would then come and make that happen. And then later in my life, I worked for the Discovery Channel, and it was much the same situation. There were many other TV companies doing documentaries, but the special thing about them is they had written their own software, again on mainframes, to take their business model, which is selling advertising, and have IT support. And that was their secret. And as it happened at Discovery, I was on the committee to replace their mainframe with off-the-shelf software. And for 2 years, we tried to find off-the-shelf software, and we found that to do that, we would have to act like every other company out there. And Discovery would no longer be anything special. It would be a documentary company selling ads like everybody else. Now in the modern era, what that means is Shopify. Everyone says, why don't you just run Shopify? They do all this for you, and then you can spend your time doing something else. And this presentation is in a way for me to finally explain to those people what we can do to support the company and how it runs that no one else can do. So this is gonna be just show and tell on the website. So this is the first page, and that's the machine, click. And one thing I'll mention is that besides working on the NaviServer, so I'm the only programmer. There's a programmer who does the firmware and the hardware in here, and that's it for the size of our company. We're 25 people in Hong Kong, another 25 people all over the globe. And about a dozen people work on building machines. The other 35 essentially spend their entire day on apps that I've put inside NaviServer. It runs their job. So this is the current machine, click. And my real job is managing the product. And this is the next machine that's coming out this autumn. Click. And we also make a whole bunch of coffee accessories. And here I want to show you, this is the first example of the customization that NaviServer allows me to do. When I go to a place like Shopify, I have this kind of cold experience where the price is the price, and I don't get a special deal for buying more, where I am in the world, nothing like that. And I had this experience living in the San Francisco area. I'd go to the shop, the farmer's market, and there was an Iranian stand that sold breads and spreads. And I would always, no matter what, come home with bags full of their stuff, even when I promised myself I wasn't gonna buy any, because they were so good at upselling. There would be some free things, and then this, a little bit of flirting, and suddenly we're eating Iranian all week. And I wanted to do much the same thing, but on the website, I witnessed that the phone calls coming to companies wanting to negotiate a better price were incredibly time consuming. And so I programmed in a whole discount schedule, but also little incentives. So each time you buy something, if you bought a little bit more, this would happen. So next, here's the add button. You've added quantity one, there's your price. Buy one more accessory and get 10% off. Click. Buy four more accessories and get 15% off. Right, click. Cool, you're getting 50% off all your accessories. You're getting free shipping. Next, buy 10 more accessories, get 20% off. Right, it's that Iranian woman saying, here, try this, you can get a little bit more. And I've never seen this, and it's incredibly effective. Virtually nobody buys one item. So we're based in Hong Kong. We have to partially underwrite the price of shipping. So we charge $10 to ship, but the actual price is about $20 for us to ship. So when people buy one item, let's say a $15 item or $14 item, we're not making any money. It's only when they start buying three or more that they redo. And of course, if they buy a lot, we're finally making some money because the shipping scales up. Click please. Now we're on a shopping cart. So everything is custom. There's no stock code at all. So the shopping cart is there. And one of the decisions I made was to use JavaScript extensively in partnership with Tickle. So what Tickle does is all the SQL stuff happens, the page generation happens, and then inline JavaScript is written here. So the customer's experience is like of a modern website. So we're not going to do it, but if you hit plus and minus here, or you change the currency or the country, everything happens immediately. There's no page refresh, because it's all been filled up. So here's another thing, and these are realities of shipping that a Shopify doesn't do. We can send up to 2 kilos using the postal system. After 2 kilos, we have to ship by UPS. Now, we did this invisibly to people because we had no way to do anything else, right? You have 3 kilos, I have to send UPS. I turned this into a customer benefit by saying, if you buy 2 kilos, instead of waiting 10 days, you'll have it in 2 days. And in order to do that, I have to track the weight. So I have metadata on each one, and this is saying my package weight is 200 grams, click. So now I've added another one, and now I'm at 300 grams, click. And now I have fast, free UPS shipping, package weight 2,000 grams. And so another issue is that we pay customs for you once you hit that, but only for certain countries, because some countries have customs officers that need bribes, and we don't get involved in those countries then. You'll have to figure out that. But that's the reality that, again, a Shopify just doesn't deal with. Or the Canadian postal system goes on strike every 2 years. We've got to code that in and put it in, and suddenly the rates change for just 2 weeks, and then they're out of strike. And again, companies just can't deal with the mess that is global shipping logistics, and that's before COVID and Trump. Click, please. Okay. And so another aspect is, at the very beginning, I knew being in Hong Kong, a lot of foreigners would say, I don't want to buy far away. They want to buy locally. And the only way to avoid that being a problem was to sell globally to every country, and that meant in their language. So we've just switched to French. And one of the key things I've seen when translating software is they tend to be lookup tables, right? You say, please display a string, buy now. And then there's a lookup table. And you hand the table of strings to be translated to a translator. They translate it, you put it in the app, and it's terrible. Because the translations are all atomic, they're not in context. So a key thing we did here, and this code is 15 years old, maybe. It's from Navi server using the NS cache mechanism. Every single string, every single one here, is in an NS cache. And you can hit, if you are logged in as an admin, the admin button, and it'll say, here's all the text you just saw on this page. And that includes the context. So if you do something strange, funny, something that most people don't see often, you're translating that exact text that just happened there. Click. So here we are in Korean, click. And so I have an admin interface for translators, and translators are not the same thing as my employees. I have volunteers out there, customers, who want to support it. So I have a separate translation interface. They do get HP off. And you can search for things that are untranslated, current use, not, and search. the current use and not current use turns out to be quite important, because you'll write a sentence and then go, no, that's badly worded, write it again, and now there's two things to translate. So what I do is I keep track of what's actually been seen since the servers got restarted. So click. So here we are with café au lait, and let's just say that's way too French. No one says café au lait anymore. The French have Americanized, which they have, and they now say for café latte. So click. So one of the things you can do is you can hit search, and it'll show you the English and French. And for untranslated things, you can also hit Google and get a Google Translate. Now that turns out to be key, because I found that, let's say, the Hebrew translation was 90% done in Hebrew, and there were a few sentences in English. The Jews who were reading that page would look at it and go, well, I know enough English, I'll just read the English and continue. No one would translate the remaining English. But it turned out that if you use Google Translate to make a horrible machine translation of the remaining English to Hebrew, it would offend their eyes, and they would correct it. So leaving original strings mixed in with translated strings doesn't work. The original strings will start to creep in. But mixing good human translation with horrible machine translation, you're guaranteed it'll offend people and they'll have to correct it. So click. So here I am, I've changed pour café latte, and click. And when they hit save, page reload, it's there dynamically. And the key lesson here is the one from Wikipedia, which is the vast majority of edits are done in under 1 minute. Right? They're tiny little spot edits. And I don't require people to be employees of mine. Anyone who speaks a foreign language can say, I'd like to be a website translator, I want to help you. And we give them a name, a login, and then anytime they see anything they don't like, they just fix it. Right? There is a battle between the Swiss Germans and the German Germans. on certain words, especially because so much of the coffee domain is borrowed from English. So there's that question of, do we use the English or the newly coined local one? Click. Okay. So another aspect, especially I saw this at Discovery Channel, we had a whole website division, and a lot of companies organize this way. So if you want to change, let's say you're in the product department, you have to go petition the IT department, the webmaster then does it and tells you I did it. Could be 2 weeks later. A really a common problem we have is we make small runs of things, usually 500 pieces, and we're constantly then iterating and having small numbers of things remaining. And that's a problem that most sales systems can't do. I have three of something, and I'd like to sell those three and then take it off the website. And that's what this does. So speaking of historical old stuff like Tickle, we're still on Lotus Notes for our internal database, our forms and database. And all the management of every product we have, the form filling out, is going to happen in Lotus Notes. Notes gives us a XML output. The XML gets imported by Navi server into a SQLite, MySQL table. And when someone comes to this page for the first time, this gets pulled in. I'm using, again, NS caches, because these things, so we're doing about 2 million hits a month, 2 million people a month on this website. Not hits, but 2 million people, which is quite a lot. Now, probably 80% of that is AI. It's really hard to tell. But this is a very heavyweight SQL query. It's doing two things. For every product on this page, there's about 80 of them, it's finding out the inventory level at a certain date, and then it's counting every single sale of that product since that inventory date and subtracting that. So for each of these things, this button, the add button, is going to remove itself just at the moment where the inventory level goes to zero for that item. Click. Okay, so here we are in Lotus Notes, and this all eventually replaced with some forms in Navi server. I just haven't. It just was convenient to do it in this. And there's this is metadata editing. So here we are with the product that was Tamping Cradle. That was the thing we were looking at. A bunch of photos. Here is the ship date and the inventory date. Okay, sorry, not the inventory date. And then what web pages you want to show up on. So I mentioned that a real common problem is the webmaster's in the middle. What I've been doing is writing more and more code to let my own staff publish things directly to the internet with some sort of workflow, so I'm no longer in there. So I no longer am involved with these things. So these are all photos, for example, in the photo department, makes nice photos. click. So here's more metadata about stuff. There's something called assemblies, right? Things get, parts get put together to make assemblies, and those are trees and hierarchies. Here's the inventory count. There's 471 on this date in 2023. And so every once in a while, there's a count of exactly how many are there on that day, and that's being tracked real time. Click. They can, when they're writing descriptions, not can, they should, put the descriptions here, and this DT is just decent translate. And so they're putting tickle inside here. Very simple tickle, but nonetheless tickle. And then these strings, the first time they appear on the website, are automatically going to appear in the translation table for then translators to translate. The advantage is this is a cosmetic defect version. And the woman, actually, if we went into edit mode, we can't. This blue underlined in notes is actually a bit of HTML. And she's uploaded a sample picture of a defective product so that we have the perfect version of this product and then the slightly defective version of this product, which people want to see. Like, what happens if I get 20%? How much worse is it? And that's usually actually a collage photos. Click. So I'm going to continue. This is the show and tell of all the stuff. We're still only on the customer-facing stuff. So we mostly sell our stuff through word of mouth and through videos. And I used to embed the videos on the webpage. Recently, I've switched to instead doing this. So you click on it, and then it goes there. We're using the YouTube API to fetch the high-resolution versions and then converting them to AVIF files, which is a new graphic format that's crazy small. And the blog. So this is something you'll not really see on most websites, is all the features are all implemented in the same platform, so it's all assembled, incorporated, integrated. So these are the latest blog entries, and the blog is something I wrote inside Navi server. Click. And here's a blog entry. And I wasn't really expecting this, but oh my god, Google Search Index loves blogs. As soon as we put the blog up, and I took all these historical postings I used to make to forums, we are number two or three for every single topic I discuss. And our search hits tripled. Like that was just massive. Now part of it is having an RSS feed. This is, I'll show a couple more features, but here's older and newer, generate automatically. I've got hashtags that are also in there. Click please. And can't read it that well, but this is markdown here, okay? And the word tag, colon, and then some words there. So tag, colon is being converted into later into hrefs and then pages that show all the pages that use that. This is a widget for previewing markdown, and this is kind of, then I ran into some issues, and I also wanted to show this presentation in case people say there's a better way to do that. So markdown is one where I've had some problems, because markdown as a spec is not completely nailed down. And so this widget, what this displays here, is not exactly the same thing as what the tickle markdown renderer does. The tickle markdown renderer I don't use. I found it to go to 100% CPU at times with certain markdowns. And that's really bad on a shared web server. So I'm using a command line one. Also, the markdown for tickle and the other one. There's not really a good way to extend them. So here I have this tag colon that I want to put tags, comma list. I'm just fixing those with regular expressions. I was really happy to see regular expressions adding commands, because this sort of thing is quite hard. So for example, if you embed a YouTube video, need to go fetch that YouTube video, that's a regular expression that finds YouTube video tags and then runs some code to go fetch it and comes back. The hack I'm doing now, which is ugly but it works, is I take a tag like this, tag these two words, I wrap it with Navi server greater than percent signs, and then I evaluate it as a web page and then bring it back again. That was my hack to not having regular expressions do commands. Click please. Just another example here, Chinese simplified. So there is an HTML meta command that allows you to say there's another page out there that's just a translated version of this one. Google really likes that as well, because it tends to assign the same Google weight as the English version to the Chinese version, even though few people read it. Since companies live and die by search results, these are important things. Click. All right, and then here's the interface for the admin, and you can see, once again, I'm trying to get out of the middle, so here are the pages, and then here's the translations that have been done. Click. Some algorithms, for example, here it's customers who bought this also bought, and this is customer aware, so there's a cookie here that knows I'm the logged in customer, and it's automatically removing anything I've previously bought, so it doesn't recommend things that you've already bought. Click. Search results, I'd really love a search result technology that didn't, a search technology that didn't require me to install Postgres and create a whole thing. I don't have that many people searching, so an article version would be fine. But what I am doing is, in Navi Server, I am outputting JSON documents of metadata of the whole website, as well as everything in the blog, everything in the manual. And so when I search for something like funnel, it's able to find things like an actual web page, a blog entry, as well as products. This is an interesting feature. We only sell direct, keep the margin, and also support our customers that way. But people want to try the product out, and this is a main advantage our competitors have over us with stores. Instead, because we're kind of a passion project, a passion for us, but also the customers are, and I suggested that people who were interested could make coffee for strangers using our machine. And 180 people have said so. And so all over the world now, you can find a local who will greet you into the house and make a coffee and explain our machine to you. So there's two in Italy. We don't sell that much to Italy, but two is certainly not bad. Here and now in Switzerland, and so this is talking to OpenStreetMaps. Click. And these are all ambassadors all over the planet. Click. And you can see, for some reason, French doesn't do it. I don't know why. We have a lot of 200 machines in France. But Austria, Switzerland, you know, everywhere else, quite big. Click. And there's a internal email system, so people are worried about their anonymity. They don't want spammers or anyone out there. So anyone off the website can click here to send them mail. And it's through our tech support system. So their identity is not released until they decide to release contact to that person. Click. So there was a little link there that said see them on Basecamp. We use Basecamp, which is forum software, essentially for companies. So this is another integration is you can, if you're a member already of Basecamp, you can click and then see this person and what they're talking about and talk to them through the forum software. Click. Here's integration, the pay with credit card is integrated with Stripe's API. And the nice thing there is that once you've bought once, you don't ever have to give me your credit card again. Instead, it sends you an SMS to approve. So when they go in, it already knows who you are, you hit pay, and they'll just say, you approve this charge, yes. And getting rid of that step is quite important. Click. And now we're on the admin side. So there's no data entry at all of any orders of all of our customers. So they just hit pay, we're now on the admin interface, click please. And we're looking at my order book. Now I don't pay anything for my own products, but here's all the products, here's various notes, click. And here's tech support. So here's Miriam, speaks a bunch of languages, she's Swiss, talking to me. Also, every machine I own and the warranty status, because people try to get repairs out of warranty, sneaking through, click. these are the 10 tech support messages that have come in that haven't been answered yet, click. And then this is Miriam's own little job here. So she's spending all day basically answering things here, click. We're tied in also, this is something called Respond.io, which is a multi-client direct message platform supporting WhatsApp, Instant Messenger, WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, WeChat, all this stuff. in one thing, and you see the user ID is in Respond.io, so you can bounce back and forth. So people can talk to us via WhatsApp, yet they're still in the tech support system. Click. We also run the factory, so we're building machines, and every run of 50 machines that are built, the serial numbers, what it is, and then there's also notes on that run. So we know everything about that manufacturing run. Click. Here's when we're on tour. I'm using this feature. This is tying into OpenStreetMap again. We're converting everyone's address to a geolocation so that when I have an event, I can send an email out here to people in this area telling them about the event. Click. This is a customer whose name is Puff. The Chinese like nicknames. He's bought quite a lot. Click. And one of the things that happens is people will buy more than once in one day, and other systems like Shopify don't do anything about that. You send two packages. This notices it and asks you to combine them. Click. Here's reality is very messy. So here's a customer who's just bought a couple things, just little images of what they've bought. Click. And you get an idea, this is their payments to make that happen. And one of the things that's very common is people to change their mind and get partial refunds, buy some more. Again, Shopify says, refund the entire thing, make a new order. But if you take someone's money and then you make smaller modifications, you're much more likely not to lose them than if you say, cancel the order, start again. Click. Here's our stock. This is on our website as well, of every model we have and how many days this represents. So when people say, how quickly can you ship? What will my waiting time be? But also, do we have enough stock? Like, we only have 26 days of this thing. Next. So for every product, we also have, of course, sales analysis. So this is one product, and these are two YouTube videos. not from us, but from influencers that caused these. Click. And this had two events. This had an influencer and a World Barista Champion that used our product, which caused a massive spike, and then, of course, back to normal. Click. when you buy an espresso machine, you can also highly customize it. So one of the things we do is we track every single part in the machine, how much it costs, and then you can also swap out a large number of them. So this is the customer choosing to customize. Click. And then their shopping cart then actually says, this is the original part, and it's being replaced with this. And click. This then integrates with QuickBooks, and here's all the integrations. QuickBooks has a beautiful RESTful API. Click. And here we are looking at going directly in, and everything here has been imported directly. Click. When people are buying machines, this was quite important because integrating, usually you have whole accounting departments for doing all this stuff, and automating all this just gets your profit up because you now don't have to hire these people. But also, you actually have accurate understanding of what's happening. So we sold a machine to someone, but what about all the parts? So click. This is the build, the factory build. So when we build machines, we track the actual cost on a FIFO basis of every single part. So we know every machine we build exactly what it cost. This doesn't exist. Like, no one else has this feature to know to the day how much this machine costs. So if you bought 10 resistors one day, because you can only buy 10, they go into the FIFO pile. When they come out, they go back here. And we do this by digging into the accounting event log in QuickBooks. So we actually create events, then remove them, then dig into the accounting log and see what we just did, and then recreate it with all the real numbers. Click. And this is just the final thing. This if you've ever done a search for some Tickle code, this guy, Chilcat, he's got a C library that does just crazy amounts of stuff, and he's documented it all. He has a code generator, and so he has examples in Tickle on how to do most everything. So Tickle cookbook create an invoice, and he's got this code. I've talked to him a fair amount because it's code generated, and sometimes there's mistakes in it. It's great that this is out there, and it allows you to do things like have exact code for QuickBooks as opposed to trying to figure it out. I have to use this because to this day there's no OAuth 2 support in Tickle, and that is a huge thing as so many services are using OAuth 2. Basecamp uses OAuth 2, I can't talk to that API. And the problem is that this being C code, it has a tendency to core dump. And so I can't run inside Navi server or core dump Navi server itself. So I'm spawning processes to run this sort of thing. It does the job, but it's the most hackish thing I've got there. But I'm also really happy that this guy, who's written all this functionality, supports Tickle. So that is the end of my presentation. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
What do you mean you cannot run it inside Navi Server?
The problem is that it's a DLL or a loadable library, is how it works, and then it adds commands.
I'm using it also, but
yeah.
What I did, I took his DLL and just create package and load DLL, and I'm using it in Navi Server.
Does it never crash on you?
No.
It core dumps on me. For OAuth 2.
It might depend on the package you're using. There's a long list of packages, and I think some of them are thread safe, other ones not.
Okay.
He got some thread safe operations, but I don't know what he's used in.
So where this is core dumping is if the OAuth 2 callback doesn't happen, when the client times out, it crashes. So you, in order to OAuth 2, you send a request out, wait for the callback to happen. If the callback never happens, eventually the thing goes flat. And there are also problems where, let's say, someone does OAuth 2 login, they go, oh, I don't know where my password is, and they come back and they have to create another one. You can't have two OAuth 2 servers waiting for callbacks on the same port, and now I've got a problem. So I'd much rather have a long-running OAuth 2 callback port that just received all of them. This is kind of a constant problem because the way QuickBooks API is done, and it's quite nice, is you get a token and then you're supposed to call a refresh within a half hour to keep it working, which I would want to do so that as people buy, QuickBooks is kept in sync. But because it's occasionally crashing, occasionally our tokens die and it has to be manually refreshed.
Maybe it's a QuickBook. I'm not using
QuickBook. No, it's not a QuickBooks thing. It's definitely an OAuth thing with the client coming back and dying. And I've never managed to get Basecamp's OAuth 2 to work either because they did some quirks. And because I don't have the source to this, it's a local library, I can't fix it. So that's one of the advantages of having open source, is they did a slightly weird OAuth 2 implementation. If I had the source, I could just make it work.
Yeah, I'm not using his example. I'm not normally to try catch.
But it's okay. I mean, I do self-running, self-standing Tickle programs that essentially are APIs. They're essentially REST, right? So it's a command line, it's a main with a couple things, then they return actually a Tickle list of the results. And Unix can deal with things loading, crashing forever. I can deal with it. Anything else? Oh, thank you.
Fox and Tom.